Welcome, everyone, to episode 453 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek. Summer League is over, but we had a lot of actual NBA news to discuss, surprisingly, in mid-August. So today we're going to talk about two Patrick Beverley trades, Joel Embiid signing the Supermax, Marcus Smart signing an extension with the Boston Celtics, and we're going to break down the NBA's Christmas Day schedule as well. Before we get into all of that, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bios to give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some five-star reviews. We're being hosted by Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Joining me today, as always, is a guy who I haven't talked to in almost 2 weeks, Morten Jensen. How's it going?
It's going well. You must have enjoyed the silence.
I wouldn't call it silence when I'm taking care of a five-month-old all week, but
this is true. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you for recording with Deeks in my absence. I am back from Chicago, somehow survived more than 24 hours in the car with an infant.
Yeah. How did that go?
Surprisingly well. He had like one meltdown each leg of the trip. So one on the way up, one on the way back, but you know, for 12 hours each way, that's really surprisingly good. And he was
that's a good ratio right there.
Yeah, he was well behaved all week. I think we like threaded the needle perfectly between the 4 month sleep regression, because he actually slept pretty decently while he was up there. Jet lag actually kind of hit him harder than I would have expected. Like, he was waking up at 4:30 instead of 5:30 or 6 every day. But he wasn't like teething, and he doesn't have a stranger danger yet, so passing him between a ton of different relatives was not as bad as it will be in like a month or two. So
nice one.
Yeah. Good trip overall. But yeah, we had a lot of NBA news over the past week. I'm not going to pretend that I had no time to watch Summer League. So we are not going to discuss much Summer League today unless you want to at the end. But Patrick Beverley has been traded not once, but twice in the past 4 or 5 days now. Yeah. The first one was the Clippers trading him, Rajon Rondo, and Daniel Oturu to the Memphis Grizzlies for Eric Bledsoe, reuniting Bledsoe in Clipperland. What did you think of that trade for both sides?
Well, I mean, I know that the Clippers did it also to save some money long term, mm-hmm. which makes sense because why not save some money if Kawhi is out for the full year? That just is logical to me. I think they're like, if they were trading for Eric Bledsoe, the player, I think that might be a little bit ill-advised. I don't think he's the guy who left them back in the day. I don't think he's the guy who was the same player as he was in Milwaukee just 2 years ago. So I really don't have a whole lot of expectations for Eric Bledsoe. I know that the argument is, well, we need a playmaker, but then I just wonder why you're trading for Eric Bledsoe and trading away Rajon Rondo.
Yeah. But I mean, I could see it if the argument is like, we just need another guy who could be a volume scorer. I know he struggled last year in New Orleans, but you know, in Milwaukee, he was still pretty effective in terms of his efficiency. Like, he's not going to be a high volume 3-point shooter, but you know, he averaged somewhere around 15 points, 5.5 assists, 4.5 rebounds per game.
So in limited minutes.
Yeah. So if you know, Kawhi is likely to miss most, if not all, of next season. So a lot of the scoring burden is going to fall on Paul George, Reggie Jackson, Marcus Morris. Like, the jump between those top two and number three, like, Nick Batum's going to have to take on more. You know, I can understand feeling a little skittish about that if I'm the Clippers. And, you know, does Bledsoe increase their championship upside? No, I think we've seen enough of Eric Bledsoe in the playoffs to know that. But, you know, does he at least keep them afloat in the regular season to the point that, you know, maybe he gets them into a top six seed and Kawhi comes back, you know, in March or April, and they suddenly have a full strength team heading into the playoffs? I think that's where it becomes a little bit more interesting.
Yeah.
What did you think about it from Memphis's side?
Blah. Like, honestly, like, the entire deal I just didn't really find it all that exciting. Like, yeah. I was just, okay. It's like, it was, I think primarily these were financially driven trades. Like, what is Patrick Beverley, who is not no longer in Memphis even,
right,
or Rajon Rondo going to do? Like, Rondo, I have to assume, is also going to be bought out or something. Like, or Toro, are they going to believe in him moving forward? I don't think so.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I guess we have to analyze it from Memphis's side,
right,
based on the other trade that happened, I think, two days later, where Memphis traded Patrick Beverley to the Minnesota Timberwolves for Jarrett Culver and Juancho Hernan Gomez. So, you know, knowing that they were able to parlay Bev into a flyer on Culver, who was the number six pick in 2019, and then Hernan Gomez, who is a solid rotation player, not going to blow your doors off, you know, not going to be like a...
But injured, apparently.
Yeah, but like, you know, he's fine. He's nothing special, but he is an NBA player.
Right.
So, yeah, especially with Culver, it seems like, you know, this trade was very divisive for what I saw among Grizzlies and Timberwolves fans.
Yes.
So let's get into it from Memphis's side first. Do you think Culver, you know, has struggled a lot in his first two seasons, right, has not really showed much of anything, especially given where he was drafted? Do you think there's a chance that now getting a fresh start in Memphis, he'll have an opportunity to show why he was a number six pick 2 years ago?
Like, do I think he's ever going to reach number overall, six overall status? No. Do I think he can redeem himself to a certain degree? Absolutely. Why wouldn't he? He's still super young. There is some truth to this idea that some guys just, they stop developing with their first team because it might not be the right fit. It just didn't work out for a variety of reasons. Like, it just can't hurt. And I think Memphis gave up so little in Pat Bev. And don't get me wrong, I like Pat Bev in certain situations, like, for example, defensively, I love him. I think he's a good spot up shooter. Like, there are certain things to like about Bev, but at the same time, he is on the wrong side of 30. His game is diminishing a little bit, so I don't think he's a major sacrifice. So you're taking a swing on Culver, who, if he hits, great. If he doesn't, okay, you didn't give up a whole lot to get him. It's fine. And the same kind of goes with Hernan Gomez as well. If he gets healthy and he becomes a reliable backup and can stretch the court, awesome. Awesome for them. So these are just smart moves by Memphis, I think, in terms of getting Culver in to this extent. I mean, so is the offense really geared to playing to his strengths? That I don't know. Like, I don't know if he's going to find offensive success, but defensively, I think he's got a pretty good shot at really starting to stick out, which was his, like, the reputation on him coming in. Like, that was a defender, someone who could handle the basketball, sort of like a 6'6 Rondo, ironically. I guess we'll see. We'll know so much more in about 6 months, but I like the swing. I like that Memphis are basically saying, you know what, we're still so young. We have time. We can afford to take a swing on a guy, and we can afford to take a swing on Hernan Gomez, even if he's injured. It's fine. We didn't give up anything of significant value. What I do wonder is, I'm pretty sure we'll get to it, but I'm kind of wondering the logic from Minnesota side.
Yeah. Oh, we'll definitely get to that in a second. Okay, from Memphis's side, I'm right with you. I mean, there's especially an opportunity there. Like, the Bledsoe trade didn't make a ton of sense because you're bringing back two point guards in Beverly and Rondo, and you already have Ja Morant, who is a superstar in the making, and you have De'Anthony Melton, who is one of the best backup point guards in the league. So it's like, why are you bringing in two other point guards? You know, there was just too many minutes to go, or not enough minutes and too many players to distribute them to. So flipping Beverly for, you know, another big man in Hernan Gomez and then Culver, I think, you know, he's going to have an opportunity. I'm guessing with Grayson Allen having been traded to Milwaukee, you know, I would guess Desmond Bane's probably going to move into the starting lineup in his place. So you're probably going to see, or maybe, I don't know, maybe they just go Dylan Brooks and Kyle Anderson and then two bigs. I guess that's possible too. Either way, I think he'll have an opportunity off the bench, and playing with guys like Morant and Melton could help him get going offensively as well. In Minnesota, I mean, the emergence of Anthony Edwards, he was just never going to have that chance. You know, it's unfortunate, but that's just how things worked out. They ended up, you know, they take him in 2019 and he's okay. And then they get the number one pick and decide to use it on another guy who plays the same position. So he was just never going to have a chance to reach his potential in Minnesota. I have, you know, I think it's definitely going to happen in Memphis. No, I don't know that for sure, but I think he has a better chance to do so in Memphis than he did in Minnesota. But yes, let's go into it from Minnesota's side, because it seemed like a lot of Minnesota fans were actually pretty happy about this deal. Like I tweeted something snarky about, you know, like 2 years ago, they traded 11 and Saric to move up to number six that they used on Culver. And then 2 years later, they end up trading Culver and Hernan Gomez for Patrick Beverley, who's an expiring contract. So in terms of just value, you know, like, did you use the value of this asset, the number six pick? Well, the obvious answer is no.
Correct.
But you know, you could also argue at least he didn't double down on the mistake and, you know, realize like Culver is going to be buried. We're not going to get much out of him these next 2 years. And then we're going to have to deal with him as a restricted free agent. So maybe we bring in Pat Bev as this, you know, culture setter, culture changer, like defensive gritty, you know, what they hoped Jimmy Butler was going to be in before things went very south with Jimmy Butler. So which side of that do you fall on?
Well, so honestly, I didn't have a problem with them moving Culver. That's not my issue. I understand the logic. And look, a couple months ago, or I think it might even have been last month, I wrote a piece on Forbes basically arguing against restricted free agency. Like if you can avoid it, avoid it. Mm-hmm. Especially for guys who are all over the place like Culver. So I don't have a problem with that. It's getting back Patrick Beverley on a team that's like, they were always crowded in the backcourt. Like they moved Ricky Rubio to Cleveland and now you're filling that slot, even though you didn't really need to, I think, unless there's another move lined up. I just don't get, and yeah, I know you're nodding your head right there. It could be a Ben Simmons move. Maybe. We'll see. But I just don't understand like the logic in compiling so many guards. This team, it feels like that they have had a roster imbalance for three seasons, if not more. Yeah. Like it's just, they've been so heavy on the perimeter and then they've had Towns and virtually nothing else up front. And I don't see the logic here, but again, if there is a follow-up move, then I'll reserve judgment until we see how things shake out. But right now, if they go into the season with this team, I just don't see what that does for them.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. There is a backcourt glut still. Like you have D'Angelo Russell and Edwards as your starting backcourt, and now Pat Bev and Malik Beasley are presumably the guys coming off the bench. So at least, you know, you don't have Rubio there, you don't have Culver there anymore. So you could distribute minutes between those four guys. It, you know, is Beverly going to be happy with playing only 15 or 20 minutes a game, or do you have to go with, you know, a three small lineup where you could feasibly move Edwards or Beasley up to a three guard spot? Like we've seen these three guard lineups work before with OKC in particular a couple of years ago. So I think that's probably something we'll see. Again, I think the question more is, you know, is Beverly there long term, or is he just a 1 year rental and then he's gonna leave and you have absolutely nothing to show for the guy you drafted number six 2 years ago, and then Hernan Gomez, who again, like, he's a rotation player. Like you should be able to, even if you could have just flipped him for a second round pick down the line, like it's going to look very bad if they lost both of those guys for nothing next year.
Right. So, I mean, they got in Taurean Prince, but I just don't think, like, you could have Prince and Hernan Gomez on the same team. No problem.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they're still looking for an answer at the four next to Towns. Like Jaden McDaniels showed some real flashes as a rookie. You know, they have Josh Okogie as well. So between those two guys and Torian Prince, maybe you can piece something together. But
at the Josh Okogie at the four, he's 6'4".
No, like at the three or four.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
Yeah, because just like as your wings.
Yeah,
but yeah, I mean, it's still that is still a giant question for them. Like, who do you have? You've got your backcourt set. You have talent set. Who fills those three, four spots? Do you have enough depth there? Which, I mean, you brought it up. It does make me wonder if there's another move down the road, because we've heard, you know, numerous reports now that Minnesota is still very interested in Ben Simmons. Yeah. Does not sound like Philly is very interested in what Minnesota has to offer. But if you can find, but if you can find the third or fourth team to make something happen, that's when it gets interesting.
Yeah. So, I'm looking over this Timberwolves roster right now.
It's bleak.
Yeah.
It's really bleak.
Like, I understand there's the whole Carl Anthony Towns, D'Angelo Russell friendship factor. That's fine. That's cool. Malik Beasley, like, he's a good shooter. He's athletic. Go along with that. There's Anthony Edwards, high upside. Jaden McDaniels, high upside. Naz Reid, like, fine complimentary player and a backup big, even a spot starter. Jalen Noel can play a little bit, but it's not something where I'm like, yeah, let's go into this season locked and loaded, baby. Wolves power forever. Like, no, this looks lottery bound in some capacity, unless Edwards just goes like on a whole other level next year.
Which, to be fair, he did in the second half of his rookie year.
He could. He could. Yeah. But I mean,
I'm super high on Anthony Edwards moving forward. I think that kid is going to be a star one day, and like, he could be the sidekick to Towns. It's really the 3-4 depth for me that gives me concern. But I mean, we've talked already about, you know, the West does not look as strong as it has in past years. So do I think the Timberwolves are definitely going to make the playoffs? No. Could they potentially contend for a play-in spot? Maybe. Like, I don't know. I mean, I don't think the Rockets are drawing dead already. You know, the Thunder are going to try to continue tanking. The Kings are the Kings. So that's three teams right there. You know, like, the Timberwolves are, I would pencil them in as a non-playoff team, but you never know. Like, injuries will inevitably wipe out someone. The Spurs are probably going to fall out of that mix. So,
like, sure, but the New Orleans Pelicans might ascend, though.
Yeah. So, like, I think the Timberwolves will be in that, like, 11, 12, 13 conversation. I don't think they're going to be the worst team in the West, but...
Oh, I agree with you. No, for sure.
Yeah, but all of these moves feel very lateral. It doesn't feel like they've substantially improved their roster this year, and that's not a great sign for a team that's flirting with the luxury tax and nowhere near actual championship potential. All right, let's move on, Mort. We got some big extension news this week as well. Joel Embiid signed a 4-year, projected to be $196 million Supermax extension with the Philadelphia 76ers. Unlike his first max contract that he signed a couple of years ago, this one is fully guaranteed. No protections if he has foot, knee, back, whatever injuries. The previous one, you know, he had to reach a certain number of minutes or number of games for it to become fully guaranteed. So this one, whole thing guaranteed no matter what. And, you know, for a guy coming off of the best season of his career, finishes runner-up as MVP, I don't know what other option the Sixers had here, but it does feel risky, right?
It does. I think you and I talked about it some time ago. We were like when that extension is going to come in, it would be nice for the Sixers to have some sort of guarantees put in. So, so we're not looking at a potentially bleak situation, but you know what? I think Embiid was like, I'll play for the first under those circumstances for the first contract. That's fine. But no way in hell do I do it the second time around if I'm proving myself to be durable and effective and all those things. And he's right, because Lord knows there would have been teams out there that would have said, oh, the Sixers aren't going to pay you, or they want all these, you know, add-ins to make sure that they're safe. We won't do that. So, Joe, if you're interested, come here, baby. So, like, the Sixers had to do this, as far as I'm concerned. Like, this is where they're at. Like, does it leave you with a lot of confidence if you're a Sixers fan? I don't know. Like, that's probably a question more so to you. But, like, if I'm sitting there as a Sixers fan, I'm hoping that the big fella is going to remain injury-free for the rest of that contract, because if he goes down with anything lower body, I mean, I'm not only biting off my fingernails, I'm biting off my damn fingers.
Yeah. I mean, he had the meniscus tear this past year. They, you know, Ramona Shelburne, when reporting this news about the extension, said he's not going to need to undergo surgery. Daryl Morey was very squirrely about that during his draft. I think it was the draft night press conference where someone asked about it, and he was just dodged the question. But that there's the answer for that. But yeah, I mean, he's missed 18 games in every season so far, at least 18 games. He missed his first two seasons with a pair of foot fractures. So
yes,
there is a lot of risk baked into this contract. Like, this is not, you know, this is not a no-brainer. Like, you're giving Zion Williamson or Luka Doncic 25% right. max. This is 35% max for a guy who has a lengthy injury history at this point. But as you said, like, I don't know what the alternative is for the Sixers. They could have, I guess, waited until next year and to see if Embiid didn't make an all-NBA team, and then tried to sign him to an extension that was only 30% instead of 35. But at that point, right. Would he not just bet on himself in 22-23 to make an all-NBA team and then become eligible for the Supermax again? And the one thing you just can't have if you're the Sixers is Joel Embiid becoming an unrestricted free agent in 23.
Correct.
Like, if you piss him off to the point where he is willing to entertain offers elsewhere, that's it. Like, the last 7 or 8 years are down the drain for nothing. Like, for better or worse, with Embiid becoming the player that he has over the past half decade, your fate is tied to him. And that's risky, but it's just, you did not have another option here. And, you know, now moving forward, it could potentially be an asset for them in the sense that if they are trying to trade for Damian Lillard or Bradley Beal or whoever the case may be, those players can now look and say, okay, I know Joel Embiid's going to be here
Correct.
The next yes. 5 years. So, you know, if they don't want to play with Joel Embiid, maybe that's a negative, but I would hope a guy coming off of the season that he just had, you know, I think a lot of guys would want to play with him, especially backcourt mates like Lillard or Beal. So, you know, hopefully it is a recruiting asset rather than a minus. For the Sixers, we'll see in that regard. I mean,
oh, it should be, like, again, MVP runner up.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wouldn't want to play with that.
Right. And like, he can also, especially for guys like Dame and Beal, who are not great defenders, he can clean up a lot of mistakes yeah. on that end. So I would think that should be attractive as well. And, you know, he is the Sixers at this point. Like, they revolve around him on both ends of the floor. It's been that way ever since he debuted. Like, they fall apart the second he comes off the court. Hopefully that changes at some point. But, you know, the Raptors series a couple of years ago in the conference semifinals continues to be the best example of that, where they were a plus 90 with him and a minus 109 in 99 minutes without him. Like, as unfathomably bad as soon as he steps off the court. So, hopefully they figure out ways to be more successful both with and without him. That is something to strive for moving forward. But if nothing else, this guarantees, as long as he stays healthy, they're going to be, you know, in the top-ish echelon of the East. Like, I don't think they're going to be the number one seed this year, but they'll at least be in that conversation of potential threats to come out of the East. You know, right now, on FanDuel. They are the number three. They're behind the Nets and the Bucks, but they have better odds than the Heat and the Hawks, which actually surprises me. And now we just have to wait for the Ben Simmons shoe to drop, but it does not sound like that's coming anytime soon.
No, but it will happen. By the way, here's a fun fact, or a fun stat, rather.
Oh, boy.
It's seven years ago that Joe got drafted.
Mm-hmm.
He's played 260 games.
Fresh legs.
Fresh legs. So Andrew Wiggins in the same draft class, 525 games.
Oh, no.
It's just the contrast is just so stark, right? I mean, it's amazing. Like, remember when we thought that Joe like might never hit the court? Like, just the contrast of back then, where Sixers fans were kind of freaking out, saying, "We've completely wasted a top three pick. This guy's never gonna play. He's gonna medically retire or something." And then to go from there, somehow missing his first 2 years, and now he's the MVP runner up. I mean, I think I have Marin's next book idea.
I know. I'm going to bully her into writing about him.
Right.
He always says, like, I feel like my life's a movie. And now reading through her Giannis book, I mean, she just did such a good job of really capturing, like, who he is and where he came from. Mm. And, I mean, some of the details about, like, his early childhood growing up in Greece, like, I'm sorry, I will never slander that guy again. I don't think I did very much anyway. Like, I tried to avoid hot take Giannis games, but I just want nothing but success for that guy. And I'm sure if someone delved into Joel Embiid's childhood and upbringing, especially Mirin, who is the best of the game at this type of thing, yeah, oh, it'd be an incredible, like, absolute must read. She'd be two-time New York Times bestseller instead of one time, which she is as of last night.
Yep, this is true.
All right, so the other extension news that we got was Marcus Smart agreeing to a four-year, $77 million, quote-unquote, max contract extension with the Boston Celtics. I only say that. That is the most they were allowed to offer because NBA extension rules are stupid, but it is not. If he became a free agent next summer, he could have potentially earned a lot more than that.
Correct.
So, you know, he understand, like, $20 million, almost $20 million a year is nothing to sneeze at for a guy who is, you know, not a superstar by any means. He is a really good role player, and especially for that Celtics team, you know, has been such a good fit with them really for the last 6-7 years at this point.
Same draft class as Embiid, so 7 years in.
Yeah. And so I can understand it from his perspective, like seeing what happened with Dennis Schroeder, where, you know, you're offered $84 million and then his now teammate Dennis Schroeder have to settle for a 1 year, $5.9 million contract. Like, there is some inherent risk in turning down the bag, mm-hmm. whether it's injuries or just the market drives up and you're left without a chair in the free agent musical chairs. So what did you think of this deal for Smart and for the Celtics?
I think it was a lot, but I don't think I'm at that point where I go, oh, it's an overpay, because I understand what he does for that team, not just on the court, but also internally. Like you said, Joel Embiid is the Sixers. I would argue Marcus Smart in many ways is the Celtics. And that's with a Jaylen Brown and a Jason Tatum on the roster. So he's like the heart of that defense. Do I think at times that he becomes a little bit overrated defensively by NBA Twitter? Yes, because sometimes it's like Scottie Pippen comparisons that are getting thrown out there, which relax. But he is superbly good defensively. There's no doubt about it. He took a major leap as a facilitator yet last year over the course of the past – oh, let me look it up, actually. I want to say four seasons that he's become a much better three-point shooter. Okay, three seasons. Over the past three seasons, he's become a substantially better three-point shooter. He's become more efficient overall. Like, I just don't see his career declining anytime soon. So I mm-hmm. think they're paying him at the right moment in time. I think they're getting him through the best years of his career. And I just don't think there's any downside to doing that. Like getting a guy in his prime and paying top dollar for a guy in his prime, that's objectively a good thing. That is what NBA teams are supposed to be doing. Like, would I be more worried about getting this type of contract after this one? Yes, that's when I would be a little bit more skeptical, but I just don't have an issue with it. Not right now. He's 27. He's like, he's playing what, 32, 33 minutes per game. He's, you know, a pseudo starter. He starts most of the time. I think he only came off the bench three times last year. So like, how can you have a problem with this contract? Really? I don't see one.
Yeah. I mean, he's now in line to be their starting point guard after they traded Kemba away, and, you know, Dennis Schroeder signed with them, but it sounds like they plan to have him come off the bench and be the super sub that he was in OKC, which I think is honestly the best role for him. I hope he embraces that role and doesn't get feisty. If, you know, like Marcus Smart, for everything he does well, efficiency is not among his strong suits. Right. He's had one season where he shot at least 40% from the field. Channeling his old teammate Terry Rozier in that regard. But I mean, he does bring a ton else to the table, and, you know, as now their primary playmaker, like I don't think he's going to average, you know, 20 points and 8 assists per game this year.
Right.
Like, I'm not expecting that type of a leap, either as a scorer or as a playmaker. The offense is still going to run through the Jays. They have Al Horford back, who is a good passer, good facilitator, can do a lot from the high post in particular. So, you know, I would guess he still winds up probably around these same averages next year, even though he is the nominal starting point guard now. But I mean, this at least locks him into, like, I'm a part of this future potentially. Right. The one hiccup here is that the Celtics before this extension, if they had just wiped the books clean next offseason, they could have cleared max cap space, and Bradley Beal, as of right now, has not signed an extension with the Washington Wizards. Theoretically, will become a free agent.
Right.
Has very close ties to Jason Tatum. You know, there's definitely a world where the Celtics could have been first in line for the services of Bradley Beal. So this at least wipes out the possibility of a pure, we have enough cap space, we can just sign you outright. That said, I mean, especially given the upgrades that Washington made this offseason, I don't think you can bank on Bradley Beal requesting a trade this year. Right. Or, you know, maybe he's so happy that he signs an extension with them, because he really does seem to love the Washington area. But also, sign-in trades have become so much more popular over the last like 2 or 3 years that, if it's I don't think it's going to be an issue either way. Like, if Bradley Beal,
it has had a resurgence, yes.
Yeah. So if Bradley Beal really wants to go to Boston next year, he'll end up in Boston. Like,
right. That's how it works now.
Yeah. Like, Boston will find a way to dump Marcus Smart somewhere, either to Washington or another team, dump Al Horford, or just waive. Yeah. You know, he's only got $14.5 million guaranteed next year. Like, they will figure out a way to make it work. So if I'm a Celtics fan, I would not be fretting about, like, well, no, we just took ourselves out of the Bradley Beal market. You made it a little harder on yourselves, but it'll still work out.
Yeah, for sure. By the way, have we shut the door on actually starting Marcus Smart as a two guard and Peyton Pritchard at one? Because I kind of like that a little bit more. And I know that, like, some people are basically painting the backcourt next year as Marcus Smart and Josh Richardson, but I'm so out on Richardson at this point. I probably would rather prefer someone who's a more reliable shooter, such as Peyton.
Mm-hmm.
No, is that a dumb backcourt?
Idea.
Yeah.
I don't think it'll happen to start the year. I'll say that much, but
yeah.
You know, if Pritchard consistently outplays Richardson and Schroeder, something you have to consider.
Well, I'm assuming Schroeder is basically locked in as a six man. I think that's, like, regardless of what happens, Brad Stevens. Wow. I think he is absolutely locked in as just permanent six man. And then the point guard situation is more or less Marcus Smart and Peyton Pritchard.
Yeah.
That wouldn't shock me. Yeah.
I mean, either way, it's going to be some combination of Smart Richardson, Schroeder, Pritchard. That's your backcourt rotation.
Right.
And that's, you know, compared to what they were trotting out last year, like they trotted out the corpse of Jeff Teague for half the season. Like that's a big upgrade over what they had last year. I'm just higher in general on this Celtics team now than I was, you know, last year was just weird. They just never seemed to figure out who they wanted to be. And, you know, had the Kemba knee issues,
right.
You know, started salary dumping at the trade deadline with Daniel Tice, who was their best big, like the Tristan Thompson thing just did not work at all. But now like they have between that backcourt, the Jays, Horford, Robert Williams still, like, they have a pretty solid top eight. And then, you know, Nesmith was actually pretty decent in summer league from what I heard.
Yeah.
And
yeah, who knows? Pritchard.
Yeah. Pritchard, everything I saw I read about him was that he was just too damn good for summer league, which is great.
He was. And then he got shut down in the championship game by Davion Mitchell.
Oh, no. Oh, man. Yeah, we're going to have to recant some Davion Mitchell slander if that keeps up, because I heard
did we ever slander him? I just think we were...
Not him. It was the pick in general. The
pick, right. Yeah, exactly. I still think that's weird. I mean, I get the whole three-guard lineup, but come on. That's... yeah.
Yeah, we're going a little too far with that. But yeah, I mean, going back to the FanDuel ads, like, they are sixth in the East right now. I guess that's about right, because I mean Miami and Atlanta. I don't know. I mean, I think the Celtics are always just like lurking there as like, we could be a lot better than you think we are with the two right. Jays in particular. So I wouldn't be surprised if they pushed their way into that top four conversation this year. Yeah, I don't know.
I know what you're expecting. I'm nodding. I agree, because look, when you have Tatum and Brown, that's all you need at this point. I think when you have two players of that caliber who are only going to get better, like, yeah, the top four is definitely open to you. I don't expect them to finish there, to be honest. I do think the East has gotten so much better, and I think there are teams out there that could perform better than the Celtics. What I think they could be is one of those interesting playoff wild cards. Like, they might have a worse regular season record, and then when the playoffs roll around, they somehow hit a level of play they haven't really reached over the course of the regular season, and they start just pounding on, you know, lower level seats, teams. Mm-hmm. Like, who knows? I wouldn't be shocked. I guess we'll find out.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. There, regardless of where they end up seating wise, I don't think you're going to be psyched to draw this team in the first round.
No.
But you could say that about a lot of the East. Like,
we always say that. It seems like whoever always makes the eighth seed, we have to always say, wow, nobody wants to play those. Like, it's the same regurgitation every time around. But no, for the Celtics, I think it's true. If they end up getting eighth, I don't necessarily think that's the case, but we'll see. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked whatever happens. The only thing I'll say is, if one of Jalen or Jason goes down with a long-term injury, and knock on wood that doesn't happen, that probably writes their season.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, they have some good, like, complementary guys, but they are still very top heavy with those two.
Yeah. To the point where I might have a hot take.
Ooh.
I think both of them are going to average over 28 points per game.
Tatum wasn't far away. He was at 26.4 last year.
And Brown, I think Brown, yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, he just took a huge leap forward as a scorer last year, too.
And I don't think he's done. Like, no. We are seeing these step-by-step developments and improvements. I don't think he's done, Bri.
Yeah, but I think it's at least within the realm of possibility. I'll give you that for sure. All right, boy. So the NBA released its Christmas Day schedule this week as well. It sounds like the full schedule is coming out tomorrow. But let's break down.
Before you break it down, let me just preface this by saying the only thing I know was just what I read on Twitter. I have not gone into this because I don't care. I decided that Twitter getting into fights about this was fine without me. I'm okay with that. So go ahead and name all the teams. I have not put any thought or stock into this.
Good.
Well, so I'm just prefacing that.
I'm going to make you think on your feet then, because I want to go through which games you're most and least excited about. So we start with Hawks at Knicks. The next game is Celtics at Bucks. Then we have Warriors at Suns. We have Nets at Lakers in the, I think that's the 8 p.m. slot.
Oh, and then we have a winner. Yeah.
And then we wrap up the day with Mavericks at Jazz at 10:30. So which of these five games are you most excited to see?
Oh, that, yeah. So most, I thought you said least. That's where I said
Brooklyn Lakers. Come on.
Oh, but look, I've seen Kevin Durant and LeBron James for years, for over a decade. I know what their games are. I know what James Harden's play is. I've seen Russell Westbrook play for a decade and a half as well. I don't need to be reminded just because they're on the same team. It doesn't matter. I know how they play. There's no new revelations there. Atlanta, New York. I kind of dig that
one. That's the one you're most excited to see?
You know what? I'm actually going to go with Boston, Milwaukee. But Atlanta, New York is close, because that series got feisty, Brian.
It did.
So I want to see how that's responded to. But Boston, Milwaukee, yeah, that's always intriguing. I like that one.
Okay, we are like complete opposites. Because look,
you work for Bleacher Report, so you like all the clickbait, Brian.
I mean, Nets Lakers could be like, just in terms of title odds, those are the two favorites heading into the year. So it is a potential.
Great. Then we'll see them in June. It's fine.
We probably won't though. Like, we know how this works. Like, one of those two teams is not going to make it, most likely.
Oh, but in that case, then what? Why does this game matter? I don't care.
I'm sorry. Having Kevin Durant, James Harden, Kyrie Irving versus LeBron James, Anthony Davis, Russell Westbrook.
Oh, my God, names.
Blake Griffin, Carmelo Anthony, Dwight Howard. We have 9 Hall of Famers on the court at one time.
Wow, the ghost of Blake Griffin and the ghost of Dwight Howard. I'm so in. You sold me. You sold me.
There are interpersonal storylines with Russ versus his two teammates and KD and Harden. Russ and Harden, the drama from there with Houston falling apart.
This is the Bleacher Report Brian version I'm getting now. Bleacher Brian.
And, I mean, like, also just matchup-wise, it's going to be fascinating. Like, just seeing...
Is it, though?
I think so.
They're going to go inside. The Lakers are going to go inside. We know this because there isn't like the big post presence in Brooklyn, right?
Right.
We know
so who that stops AD.
I don't know. I don't care who wins that game. I'm just saying we know the dynamics. The Lakers are going to go inside. The Nets are going to go outside. Wow, big revelation!
The individual matchups is going to be interesting.
We've seen Kyrie Russ before. We've seen James Harden. LeBron before, KD LeBron before, on the biggest stage.
Yeah.
Several times over.
Not all together like this, and not with Kyrie versus LeBron on different team. Like, I guarantee you, there's a reason they put this at the 8 p.m. game. Like, this is going to be the highest rated game on the day.
Mm-hmm. But you know that I am not someone who conforms.
Yes, you are more excited to watch a 14th man than the best player in the NBA. I'll give you that.
Well, I still see the thing is, I watch the best player in the NBA just by, you know, being an NBA pundit, observer, fan, whatever you want to call it, because when the playoffs roll around, they're there. And over the course of the season, there are going to be a lot of these matchups. I don't get excited just because they have these constellations. And besides, Russ. Great individual skill set might be the most talent, just in terms of raw, pure talent, might be the best ever, just when it comes to differentiating of skill set and all that outside of shooting, though. But he's past 30. LeBron is like, what? He's going to be 37. He's 36. Yeah. He's going to be 37. Like, we've just seen those guys. Dwight Howard, I mean, I followed his career since 2004. I want to learn new stuff, Brian. I don't learn anything from watching all those old farts run around.
You don't learn anything about their individual games, but I think you will learn something about how these teams match up against one another, which could have major implications down the line. Like,
or it could not matter whatsoever.
Right. It might not, but I mean, this is going to be a good litmus test for both of these teams, if nothing else. Like, this has more of a chance of mattering. I agree. Like, Hawks, Knicks, there is some drama there as well, because Trae Young pissed off all of New York City during that first round.
Right, and I'm excited to see Trae Young make another leap, because I think he's got more talent in his bag. I don't think we're going to see the Trae Young of last year. I think we're going to see an improved version. That's more fun to me.
That's fair, but like, I think in terms of overall season implications, I don't expect to see a Hawks-Knicks conference finals, you know, whereas like a Nets-Lakers finals very well could happen.
So you're hyping up Brooklyn, LA, because it's a finals preview, potentially.
A potential one, and I'd like to see how these teams match up, what they learn against one another. You know, I'm guessing they're only going to play twice next year, so we're not going to have an opportunity to see these teams play very often unless they meet in the finals. And just having this many elite players on the court with one another, it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, I can't wait for the All-Star game then. That's going to blow you away.
I will say Hawks-Knicks will be fun just because, I mean, the Hawks are basically running it back, but the Knicks added Kemba and Fournier, so they will be better than they were last year when they just could not score at all against the Hawks. And maybe Julius Randle shoots above 30% from three in this, or just overall in this game.
Didn't he shoot like 26% overall?
Yeah, something like that. It was aggressively bad. I was going to say Celtics-Bucks is the one I'm least interested in, just because I think the Bucks are going to annihilate them. Like, that's the one game here that I just think is not going to be competitive.
I mean, you could be right. But the thing for me, though, is the two Jays going up against Giannis and Chris and Drew. Like, we know about those guys, but we don't know how, you know, Jalen and Jason are going to look without a Kemba, for example, without having that additional scoring punch. They might both have to put up 40 to pull this one out. I like those challenges. I like a team that's come in that they come into this one. They're definitely the lower they are not projected to win this game. Like, let's be honest here. Milwaukee will be heavily favored.
Yeah,
and I kind of like that.
Lines are out for those games. Yes, the Bucks are the heaviest favorites on Christmas Day. They are -7.
Look, that's awesome, because that's what I want to see. I want to see a team led by two young stars that are looking at that challenge and going, you know what? Screw you guys for being heavily favored. We're up to this. We are going to take it to you. And if we lose in the final second, or we just push you to the brink, that's okay. I'm down with that. I would much rather see that than a bunch of, well, LeBron definitely isn't a has-been, but Dwight is, Blake Griffin is. So that's I like those kind of games. I really do.
Except they're going to get blown out by 20, and it's going to be over by the third quarter.
And if that's the case, we're going to see Giannis utterly dominate, which I also won't have a problem with, because he's super fun.
Yeah, I just think the Bucks this year, now that they've won the title, have that monkey off their back, it feels like they're just going to go on a Warriors-esque run where they're just like, all right, we figured out how to play with one another. We're just going to annihilate you guys now.
Yeah, I actually have them as my repeat champs. So right now.
It's certainly possible. Yeah. I will say Warriors-Suns is going to be, assuming Klay is healthy and like back to himself, that should be a fun game.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm putting that like in a sort of a bubble, because again, we just don't know, right? I mean, him having missed 2 years, we don't know what he comes back as. Hopefully he's the Klay of old, but I just want to see it before I buy into the hype.
That's fair. I mean, we'll see if Wiseman takes a big leap from first to second year, and going against Ayton, one of the game's best young bigs, will be a good test for him. Mm-hmm. Steph and CP3 is just always going to be fun. Draymond's probably going to kick someone in the nuts, which will be great.
Right. Moses Moody is there. Jonathan Kuminga, who apparently, this was lost on me during pre-draft. His nickname is very unfortunate.
I don't know if that was a pre-draft thing. I think that came out afterward. And I
Oh, it did? Okay.
Yeah.
Because that's something.
I'm not going to run with that one. I think that came from the Barstool folks. So just
it did
immediately disqualifies it from.
If it did, I am too. All right. Yeah. I did not know that. Thank you for the education on that one. All right.
I think, I was offline for most of last week, but I saw like a Clutch Points graphic about it citing them. And I was like, Nope.
Definitely. Yeah.
Mavs Jazz should also be, I think, like, if I'm going to rank these games in terms of the ones I'm most excited to watch, Nets Lakers 1 for me, Warriors Suns 2. I'm torn between Hawks Knicks and Mavs Jazz at 3-4, probably Hawks Knicks just for the, the rematch. And also I'm not going to be awake at 10:30 PM on Christmas night, most likely, or not till 1 AM. But Mavs Jazz should be fun. Just like, I mean, again, the Jazz, number one seed in the West last year.
Right.
Had very unfortunate injury luck at the wrong time in the playoffs. But like, I fully expect them to be in that top three, top four conversation again. And then, you have Luka on the other side, who is just a walking 40-point triple-double.
Luka will be fun. What won't be fun is seeing how the team is going to underperform thanks to Jason Kidd.
Yes. And, not getting the upgrades that they were hoping to land in free agency this year. Like, Reggie Bullock is great, and I think he'll be a really nice fit there. But, I don't think the Mavs are substantially better than they were last year, unless, I'm sure Luka will continue to build upon his game and, improve his efficiency, cut down on turnovers, become better defensively. But Kristaps
Porzingis, unless Jason Kidd throws him out at center because reasons.
Or just bullies him relentlessly like he did with a lot of the Bucks players. Kristaps Porzingis, though, seeing how he bounces back from the up and down year he had last year should be really interesting.
And maybe they get Lauri Markkanen in a sign and trade. So if that happens, that would also be that wouldn't be that as important. Never mind.
Kristaps and poor man's Kristaps together at last.
Oh boy. That is so sad.
I love the Bulls fans are just clinging to this hope of like, please someone take Lauri from us. Just
look, please. if the Bulls end up getting Maxi Kleber for Lauri Markkanen, that's a haul.
Yeah, no, I'm totally with you. I would be surprised if that happens. I forget who I saw this from. Might have been either a Bulls person or a Mavericks person, maybe even Tim Cato, but someone mentioned that like Moses Brown can't be aggregated until I want to say early October, but like maybe they're just waiting to do Brown plus Powell for Porzingis and or for
Markkanen.
For Porzingis, poor Markkanen.
Well, I mean, the Bulls signed Tony Bradley, so I don't know if that makes a bunch of sense. Like, they have a gapping hole at the backup four slot. Like a Kleber would come in and solve so many issues for them, for the bench unit. So I think like, if they're against Kleber, I would be a little bit surprised.
Oh no. I think the Bulls would want Kleber. I just don't think the Mavericks would want to give him up. It sounds like
The Mavericks would prefer. See, that's interesting. That's actually an interesting discussion. I know we're going way off the rails here, but for the Mavericks, you would almost assume that Moses Brown would be a preferred guy to keep because of his age proximity to Luka.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the contract.
And it the just contract.
Seems like no one watched Moses Brown last year based on how like the Celtics just thought he was a throw-in in that trade and then dumped him in the Jay Rich thing.
That was really weird because Brown even had like an insane game against the Celtics themselves. So the Celtics couldn't even have they must have noticed.
Right. Brad Stevens was right there on the sideline for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he like held his own against Embiid one game, which just does not happen for young bigs, especially. It was really impressive.
If I'm Dallas, I would prioritize Moses Brown. I really would. I mean, what is he, 21? So like he aligns perfectly with Luka. Like you mentioned the contract. He's a good rebounder. He's a developing offensive player. Like, why not? And look, I understand it would be a huge loss to lose Maxi Kleber. But if I'm them, I go with the young upside guy. I just do. Like, they, no, I'm not. I'm not. Oh, you're so annoying. I know why you're laughing. No, but I mean, we've talked about how they just haven't been able to, like, put young pieces around Luka. Now they have one. If they trade him away, why? And especially for marketing, I mean, look, there's a real chance that Moses Brown in 24 months is a significantly better player than Lauri Markkanen. So that's why I'm saying, like, if I'm Dallas, don't do it. That would be dumb.
There's a chance that Dallas got the best player in the Jay Rich trade.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Just not right now. Not Josh Richardson is a better player, but like long term, or at least in terms of 2 years down the line, is Josh Richardson still on the Celtics? Is Moses Brown still on the Mavericks? Who's having a bigger impact for their team? Like, maybe not the better player, but more value from the player whom they acquired.
Still should never have traded Seth Curry, but yes.
Correct. All right, let's wrap up because we also got the opening week schedule. So I want to go through any of these games that stand out to you. I'll just read them out quickly here. Opening night, we start the season, ring night in Milwaukee. We have a rematch of that conference semifinal. So it is Nets Bucks. Hopefully Kevin Durant packs a slightly smaller shoe size for that game. We go Warriors Lakers after that.
Yeah.
Wednesday nationally televised games start with Celtics Knicks, then Nuggets Suns. Thursday, we have Mavericks Hawks. So we are going to hear just nothing about, or nothing except the 2018 draft revisited on before that game. And then we have Clippers, Warriors. Friday, we have Nets, Sixers, and Suns, Lakers. So any of those games pique your interest?
I mean, it will be fun to see New York trot out Boston's last starting backcourt. No. And of course, Brooklyn-Milwaukee is interesting still because I still think that dynamic there is super interesting. And I wonder if, because I don't think Giannis is done. Like, what is he, 26? So he's still not a completely finished product. I think he's thinking, you know, you still develop certain aspects of your game. And it's still somewhat old roster on the Nets. Like, KD will be, what, 33 this year?
I think so.
Yeah. So I wonder if like Giannis was on the upwards trajectory and Durant, who I presume on some small level is on the downwards trajectory. If he proves me wrong, great. That's great. If he plays until he's 42, fine by me. But I just kind of like to gauge where those two are.
Yeah, those two are the two clear-cut best teams in the East. I think you can put, you know, the Heat and the Sixers and the Hawks and whoever else, Celtics, Bulls, if you want. Like, you can put all of those teams together in a tier below. But going into the season, like, if I had to bet Nets or Bucks versus Field to come out of the East, you are clearly taking Nets or Bucks. Side of it. Seeing how, you know, the Nets had a relatively good offseason for how limited they were against going up against the luxury tax. Like, they lost Jeff Green, who was an important piece for them, but adding Patty Mills in particular, and then, you know, re-signing Blake Griffin on that cheap deal, keeping Bruce Brown on the qualifying offer, adding Cam Thomas.
There we go. That's the one I was waiting for.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the Bucks too, like getting George Hill, getting Rodney Hood, you know, they've had a sneaky good offseason as well. So like both of these teams, you could argue, got better than what they were in the playoffs. And seeing, you know, we didn't see the fully healthy Nets, I don't think, at any point against the Bucks, right? Because
for the first 10 seconds we did.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah. Like, Harden went out immediately, and then Kyrie got hurt before Harden came back. So,
let me just look it up. Did they not start all three at any point?
I don't remember. I don't think so, right? Like, wasn't Harden hurt heading in? No, he got hurt at the beginning of that series, I think.
Right. And then
Kyrie went down.
Okay.
I believe. God.
You're right. So okay. Harden played 43 seconds before leaving. Yeah. Kyrie started played 44 minutes. Durant was playing 40 minutes. That was the Blake Griffin game where he had 18 and 14, played 35 minutes, and actually took it to Giannis substantially. Mm-hmm. You're right. So they did start together. It was just 43 seconds.
There we go. Yeah. So we still really haven't seen these two teams at full strength. And like hell, the Bucks didn't have Dante DiVincenzo last year, who we continually harped on, you know, throughout that playoff run as being a sneaky big loss for them. So, you know, they lost PJ Tucker, but they re-signed Bobby Portis and you know, fill out their bet. They're going to be deeper than they were last year. Especially during the finals run, when they have like.
And did you mention guys. Grayson Allen?
No, I didn't. Yeah, good point. Him too. Yeah, like they go like legit nine or ten deep now, which you could not say last year. So I agree with you. That's Bucks, like that perfect game to start the season with. That's the one I'm most excited for. I want to be excited for Mavericks Hawks, but again, I do not want to rehash the 2018 draft every two times.
Oh, really? ESPN loves it though.
And they're going to, I mean, everyone's going to lean into it. That is the clear angle. And clearly that's why the NBA selected that as one of these marquee games. But can't we just say both teams are happy with their choice?
Both teams played hard. Yeah.
But like, you know, I mean, I guess maybe not because Atlanta is like supposedly shopping Cam Reddish, but Cam Reddish has turned out to be very good. And Trey's a superstar. Luka's a superstar. Like, this is not a trade where you look back in a couple of years and you're like, oh, wow, this team totally effed up. Like, this is not the KG Pierce trade or this is not the Markel Fultz trade. Like, both teams, it worked out well for both teams. So let's just enjoy both of these guys without comparing one to the other all the time.
No, but you have to understand, they have to drive Twitter engagement.
Oh, it'll work. Yeah, there's no better way to rile up both fan bases that bring up the other player, I would guess.
I don't even know if it's ESPN or TNT for that game.
Let me check. Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
I guess Thursday would be TNT, right? Yeah.
Oh, yeah, TNT. That makes sense. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, all right, if it's CNC, they usually do it a little bit better with the graphics. Like, they don't put these players up against each other like it's some sort of UFC fight night. Yeah. But I will still guarantee you that at some point during that game, there's going to come up a graphic where Luke is on the right side, Trey's on the right side. Like, they're going to compare stats and they're going to compare wins and all that. And that screenshot, or sorry, that's graphic, is going to make the rounds on Twitter, even if there's no controversial thing in it. And people are going to be like, oh, rah, 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 for no effing reason.
Without question. So I'm not like, I'm dreading that game as much as I enjoy seeing those two players in particular. And, you know, I think it will be an interesting matchup, but I think the narrative plus, like, that's probably among the games I'm least excited about during this opening slate. Like, Nuggets Suns would be a lot more fun if Jamal Murray's healthy, but he's not. Yep. And same with Clippers Warriors. Like, if Kawhi was healthy, that'd be an awesome game. He's not. So, I think both of those games are going to be less competitive than the respective networks are going to hope.
Right.
Nets Sixers should be interesting.
Question. Just before we move on.
Yeah.
Given that it's a big market. Like, I don't have any gripes with Chicago not being there, but given so much that so much has been talked about them because of the free agency acquisition, and given that they're a large market, I was actually surprised to see that they were not included. Like, when you consider, what are they, like the league's third biggest market? No? Fourth, maybe? If, I'm not something sure. along those lines? Yeah. Like, I would just... Yeah, but I was surprised that they didn't pimp up that angle. And I almost kind of want to commend the NBA for, like, basically saying, no, we're going with good teams. Like, we're going with high quality. No, and I'm not saying the Bulls won't be good. I actually think they will be, but I think they, we know that these teams are going to be good. Like, we know for, like, that is written in stone. Like, we know that Denver, for example, fully healthy, are going to be a powerhouse. We know that Phoenix, like, they went to the freaking finals. We know that Atlanta made the conference finals. And we know that Golden State getting Clay back is a huge page turner. So, like, I kind of like that they shied away from, what's the wording I'm looking for? But the sensationalism of free agency moves.
Yeah. I know Heat fans were really pissed that they were not on Christmas Day and not on
this schedule. I didn't even realize that. That's true. Yeah, okay, they got host. They got host. That's a different. I think that's different. They got host. I don't think the Bulls got host, but if the Heat aren't there, that's pretty insane. Like, less than 2 years removed from a finals appearance. Kyle Lowry, of course. I mean, even without Lowry, I kind of think they should be in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay, I mean,
that's a little bit weird. Yeah,
like I can understand, because you're right. I think they mostly prioritize teams that went on deep playoff runs last year, with the exception of Mavericks, Warriors. So, and like, is that fair to exclude the Heat because they got swept in the first round, given the upgrades they made this offseason? Probably not. Like, I would have liked to see the Heat in one of these games instead of two Warriors, like Clippers, Warriors again. Right. Like, we have Warriors, Lakers opening night. We have Clippers, Warriors 2 days later. I don't need to see the Clippers without Kawhi Leonard. Like, I would have much rather.
That's the one I find difficult defending. Why the Clippers?
Yeah. Because, I mean, they made it to the conference finals, but.
Yeah, but no, there's no Kawhi. The team is like. It's Paul George and what right now?
Eric Bledsoe. Yeah, like, I think you could have had a Heat Bulls game that night, and that would have been a lot more entertaining. Because I agree, both of those teams, given the moves they made this offseason, I'm interested to see them. It's like those two teams and the Wizards are among the teams I'm most interested to see. Because, like, yes, we know what the Nets are, we know what the Bucks are, we know those teams are going to be good. We know. Like, I'm curious to see this Lakers experiment, but, like, they're going to be on national TV all the time. I don't need to see them twice in opening week. I want to see, Heat, Bulls, Wizards, but this is also just a ratings play, right? Like, they know the Lakers are going to drive ratings. Steph is going to drive rating. Like, that's why these teams are in here.
Right, but the Clippers, though, that's the one that confuses me, because I don't think that's going to drive ratings all that much. I that's like a Miami Golden State game. That would have been more fun, I think.
Or just move the Mavericks to the Warriors and do Heat Hawks instead, or Bulls Hawks.
Yeah, it's fair. I mean, I kind of understand that they don't include the Bulls, because one thing is they didn't make the playoffs last year. That's one thing. Two, just because they brought up big names doesn't mean it's going to work out. There's a lot of I personally think that the talk about a bad fit is vastly overstated. But if that's a thing that the national narrative is running with, then I kind of get why they shy away from that. But I don't get it with the Heat, because like Kyle Lowry fits that team like a glove already. I mean, he hasn't even stepped on the floor, and we know his playing style and personality would fit that team perfectly. So a little bit odd to me, but okay. And in terms of like the most interesting games, who do you have? Because I'm pretty sure I cut you off.
Oh no, I'm with you. It's Nets Bucks is number one for me. Other than that, like I'm not Suns Lakers, I guess, because just because the Suns had the success they did last year. So we'll see. You know, like, I think they're going to crush the Nuggets without Jamal Murray, unfortunately. I'm glad to see Jokic gets a national game on this opening week. Like, it is kind of wild that the Nuggets aren't on Christmas Day, but I'm assuming that's because Jamal Murray's injury. I know some Sixers fans were like, we're the number one seed, we're the MVP runner-up, how are we not on Christmas Day? It's because they don't know what's going to happen with Ben Simmons. And they don't, like, the NBA just does not want to deal with that level of uncertainty on these marquee slates. And it's a fair point about the Bulls too. Like, they could be very good this year, but they are very unknown. And especially that opening week, you know, it's going to take them time. They change out half their damn team. So, like, it's going to take them time to develop chemistry. Wouldn't surprise me if we see a lot more of them in the second half of the season on national TV.
But yeah, because national TV providers can just kind of flip in games, apparently.
Yeah. There's a lot of flexing, especially. And, like, I don't know how the NBA's, you know, they're going to release a schedule on Friday. I don't know if they're going to have the national TV assignments already. Hopefully, you know, like, well, I guess we'll find out. But I liked, I honestly liked the way they did it last year. We released like the first half and second half of the schedule in different parts. So we, you know, it gave them more flexibility for, oh, the Knicks are surprisingly good this year. Let's actually get them on TV instead of forcing them down your throat 30 times a game when they are god awful.
Yeah.
You know, like if the Bulls or if the Wizards, who have been traditionally mediocre for the last couple of years, if those teams do hit the ground running, I do hope we get more of them instead of the 40th Lakers game on TV when we,
like, good luck with that.
I know, but I want teams to get more, you know, more teams to get more exposure here. Like,
this is also why I'm not interested in Lakers games, Brian. I am a little bit tired, and especially because the whole LeBron thing, like, I get it, but LeBron and Lakers just created a brand new beast of, oh, we must cover these two entities of fantasticalism at the same time. And I, like, we know by now, right? We know how LeBron plays. We know the Lakers brand, and it's being wrapped around our heads, stuffed down our throats and up our asses all every single time. Just lay off the throttle a little bit. Yeah. I would really appreciate significantly less Lakers games, you know, on public TV or national TV.
Yes. That would be ideal.
Not that it affects me whatsoever. I still use League Pass, but you know what I mean. Because these games are always hyped up so big time. Like, you can't even get away from it on Twitter and social media. It's like, look, tonight, Lakers versus Team X. Like, for the, let me see, fifth time in seven nights. Okay, cool. Like, just move on already.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'll be honest, if the Sixers aren't playing on a given night, I tend to just default to what's on national TV because I have League Pass through, you know, my PlayStation. So I have to, like, switch over inputs and then start the PlayStation, go to the League Pass app, and it inevitably crashes three times. Like, if League Pass were more seamless and if I wanted to actually shell out, you know, the $200 to get it on my cable, that'd be different. But, like, otherwise, it's just easier to just punch in four numbers, go to ESPN or TNT. So, no, I would like more teams to get more national games. Like, I don't need 30 national games for any one team. Because if I really wanted to watch them that badly, I would just buy League Pass. And maybe that would incentivize people to buy League Pass. If you do want to watch the same team for 30-plus games, and they're not on national TV that much. But
League Pass should be better.
God, yes. One day it will be.
Yeah.
But yeah, a lot to look forward to this season, and we will start up. I mean, the season starts in 2 months, so we're going to start up with season preview stuff. Like, free agency just ended. It's technically still going on. Lauri Markkanen still doesn't have a team, but yeah, we got to get rolling our season preview stuff shortly. So we will stay tuned. Follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles and our bios to give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews, and we're being hosted by Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Have a good one, Mort.
You too, man.